Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Don Barnaby, Beaver Who Creates Waves. Don is First Nations Mi'kmaq from Listigouge, Quebec. Don is a Red Road Warrior. He's also an MC as well as a Northern Traditional and Southern Straight Powwow Dancer. Don, along with his wife Candida, started Healing Stitches, where they make storytelling clothing inspired by your vision that they design into wearable art to help you on your healing journey. Don just recently reached his 25-year sober milestone, and we catch up with Don, and he shares his inspiration, his strength, and his hope for those who are still struggling out there. So guys, please help me welcome Don Barnaby. All right. Hi, Don. I'm having you back for the second time. How are you?
Oh, man, I am so good. My life is so incredibly busy and in a good way. You know, it's nice to hear your voice.
Let's have you introduce yourself again so the listeners that didn't listen to your first one can get to know you.
Sure. Hey, everyone. My name is Don Barnaby. I am First Nation Mi'kmaq from Listigouge, Quebec. I am currently residing in unceded Mohawk territory, Ganawage, just about 15 minutes outside of Montreal. My sobriety date is 11/28/98, so I've been sober since last century.
Wow.
Just a little over 25 years.
Wow, that's so awesome. That's a huge milestone. Can you tell us about how that feels?
It's crazy because I was thinking about it when coming up to it. Like sometimes I get like that PMS, you know, that pre-medallion syndrome. You know, I'm like, oh, do I deserve it? And like, look at all the things that I've done in my past. But coming up to it, it was like, this is a big milestone for me because it's officially, I am sober for as long as I drank. I drank for 25 years and now I'm sober for 25 years. It's a good feeling, you know, I mean, it's a, you know, a day at a time, but it's still it's an accomplishment.
Wow, congratulations, man. How do you keep your passion for sobriety alive and thriving after all of these years?
You know, I've been drunk and I've been sober, and sober is so much better. I'm still very active in AA. Like I just chaired my home group Wednesday a few days ago. I got to pick my own speaker and still very active in my sobriety. And I think that's really important for me is that I need to stay active in complete well-briety. Things that I'm doing, I try to do only positive things. I'm really, really busy where I'm a family support worker for the only Indigenous childcare in Montreal. And what I do is I work with the parents. So instead of DYS coming into their lives and trying to break families apart, I work with families and trying to keep them together. I put on a healing circle every week, but not just there. Throughout all the Native agencies in Montreal, I do a healing circle, a talking circle through all the agencies. So there's like five other agencies that I go to on a daily basis or sometimes twice a week, three times a week. I live my life in a sacred manner. You know, I made a deal with the Creator 25 years ago. I said, if you remove the desire of a drinking drug away from me just for today, and I will dedicate my life to service and do your work. And so far, neither one of us has backed out on our deal. So I continue to do this every day. And just, you know, it's like I chase sobriety like I used to chase the booze. And when it comes down to it, it's pretty simple like that. You know, that's what I have to look at it as. You know, I want to stay sober more than I want to get drunk.
Wow. So your service that you do trying to keep families together, that is so amazing.
When I put on these meetings at the daycare, they come and they drop their kids off. And then we talk for 2 hours. I put on this talking circle for 2 hours. And I just give them a place, a safe place where they can come and talk about everything and anything. And, you know, what's said there stays there. So I pass my talking stick around. And at the end, I'm the last one to speak. And I just offer some suggestions on how I would have handled things or how I did in the past pertaining to, well, like the situations that they're going through right now. So coming from experience where I dealt with DUIS when my son was taken and I had to fight for custody. This was in Seattle and I had to fight for custody of him. You know, and then I raised my son as a single parent for a while and my drinking got in the way. You know, and I had to give him up. I had to give him back to his mother and grandmother. And so coming from experience, I've been through all the issues that these parents are going through, and especially with the struggles of recovery. I know that most of them are in recovery, and where they attend meetings, they talk to their psychiatrist, and they tell me that this is the best place that they can go to is when they come and they, you know, we smudge before, you know, and the only person who speaks is that has that stick, and there's no crosstalk. So we want to, because sometimes it's really hard for as individuals for us to open up, you know, and just to talk about and let people know something about ourselves, you know, that scares the hell out of a lot of us.
Yeah.
You know, so I constantly remind them and let them know that this is a safe place. You're safe here. You know, what you say here stays here. And I had one young fella that he always just would look at the stick and then pass it right away. And this last time he held the stick for about 5 seconds and then he passed it. And so when it came down to the end, you know, he never opens up. Like, he wouldn't even tell me his name. He was so quiet. I knew that he had taken a trip to go back to his homeland. I asked him, "So, how was your trip?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, it was pretty good." And then all of a sudden, he opened up and he just started talking and talking and talking. You know, and it was like something that he might have thought that the talking circle was over. But it was just, I just wanted to ask him how he was doing. And by doing so, like, I gained his trust and I gained him where he was able to just open up and talk about anything, you know, and that was the important thing, you know, and then he, you know, added me on Facebook and, you know, and it's like the lines of a communication are open now. You know, I want people to feel safe. I just recently did a big thing here, Ralph, that I want to share in the community that I live in now in Ganawaga. It's unceded Mohawk territory. And now they put on a really great, big competition powwow in July. And unfortunately, we were losing community members to alcohol and drugs and young ones. And this one young girl passed in a drunk driving accident. She was only 18 years old and she inspired me to do something. And I brought it to the community. There's a community service center that uses funds for the community. You know, and I brought this idea that I wanted to do a sobriety powwow on New Year's Eve. So they were really open to it, but there's a lot of traditional Iroquois socials that go at longhouse socials, you know, at the same time. And so I just said, okay, well, I want to make this a powwow, not a social. And so there's going to be powwow drums and there's going to be vendors and there's going to be intertribal dancing. And I said to get other people involved, they suggested us doing a smoke dance special. You know, because that's their style, how they dance here, our smoke dances and Eastern social dances. So, you know, I came up to them and they're like, well, what do you need from us? This was my 12th sobriety powwow that I put on, you know, but this was the first time ever in this community that there was a sobriety powwow. So I told them, I said, well, you know, drums cost money. So I want to be able to hire a few drums. And they looked at me and they're like, okay, we have money for that. I said, okay. So I'm going to need a sound system, MC, arena director, and for judges and stuff like that. And they're like, we have money for that. Oh, okay. It'd be nice if it was catered. You know, and then I just started throwing all these things out there, you know, and they're like, we have money for that. And next thing I know, they said, we wanted to do this for a while or something like this, but we never had anybody that was willing to take the reins and organize it and put it together. So they gave me less than a month to do it. Now, what I wanted to do was I just wanted to provide a safe place for our youth to attend on New Year's Eve and their families. Because how many of us, like when we're out there and we're actively drinking, we maybe left the kids at home while we hired babysitters and we went out on amateur night, you know, and got all drunk and smashed. Called it amateur night because everybody thinks they know how to drink that night. They don't, you know, and I just wanted to provide a safe place for families to go to and make memories welcoming in the new year together as a family. You know, I mean, I thought that was the most important thing we could do is to have a safe place, you know, for those who didn't want to go out there drinking or anything like that. And they just wanted to, but share that time with their family. Over 200 people showed up. And then we did a big round dance to welcoming, you know, the countdown to the new year. And there was over 100 people dancing in that circle.
Wow.
Holding hands and dancing a round dance and welcome to the final countdown. And when it hit midnight, everybody ran into the circle. Everybody joined all together in the middle of the circle at once. And, you know, and hugged everybody. And it was like, it was a really beautiful experience. And it was so successful. And then businesses in the community were like donating like gift certificates. One place donated 25 cases of water. It just like everybody was like on board at the last. I had less than a month to do this, you know, so I had to throw it together. I had to call in a lot of favors from big drums that I know, you know, that I wasn't paying them like what they were worth. But this is what I have, a budget that I'm working with. And they're like, yeah, we're down for that. Of course, it takes a village, you know, and how they say, you know, like it takes a village just to even save one community member or to raise one, you know. And so I wanted to do that. It was such a success. We had it at the school in the gym. It was such a success that they told me, my finance people told me that we're going to do this, make it annual. If you're willing to continue to take the reins, we'll continue to financially support you to make it happen. That was the first annual sobriety powwow. And we're going to continue to do it every year on New Year's Eve. You know, that's the service work that really matters when you affect a lot of people at once. It helps, you know, when you're just helping one person, but when you're able to help and make that change in a community, that's like, thank you, Creator. Like my sponsor would say, you're earning your God dollars.
Yeah. I want to go back and talk about, you know, you mentioned that you help families get back together. I know people that have, you know, lost their kids because of drinking, and they have to jump through all of these hoops that the agencies put them through. Some of them feel like, oh man, how can I get through this? What kind of encouragement can you give them, or what can you tell them?
I tell them, you know, that active addiction doesn't define you, but the actions that you take in trying to better your life, whatever the reason is, whether you get there from a nudge from the judge or, you know, like I got sober after my daughter was born. You know, and I didn't, she deserved a sober father, you know, so that's why I put down the drink. But no matter what you use as a tool to embrace it, you never have to be alone again. You never have to feel alone again. You know, you can experience good things that happen in your life, but when you're drinking and drugging, that blocks everything out, blocks everything. And you're not allowed to achieve that goodness that you want in your heart. Instead, you live with a lot of pain and guilt and remorse. You never have to feel that way again. You never do. You know, like well-briety, recovery, sobriety. Like I said, when I told you earlier today, there's not enough minutes in the hour, not enough hours in the day, not enough days in the week that I get to do all the things that I'm doing today. I get to do these things. I don't have to do anything. I get to do things. And I always say, you know why? Yeah, because I didn't drink today. I can just leave it as simple as that because I didn't drink today. You know, and I tell people, you know, like I remember this old guy, they call him Johnny Paleface. I remember talking to him. He was like in his 90s. And I remember his sobriety date. It was July 17th, 1959. And he told me, he goes, you know, I just said, you know, I know it's a day at a time. He goes, but you know what? I'm just not going to drink today. I tell myself that every time and every day when I wake up, I'm not going to drink today. And he kept telling himself, however, whatever excuse or whatever saying or whatever action that you take, you know, it's going to make a difference because you're taking action because sobriety is an action mode. If you're just sitting there and you're just sitting in your own stuff, that stuff will get you back out there drinking. So take the time to focus on the good life that is around you. Take the time to focus on your children, on your family. However you get here, just stay here. For some of us, it's difficult. You know, you look up in Wikipedia, chronic relapses, and there was a picture of me. For 10 long years, you know, I struggled and I kept picking up. And I couldn't put together more than 90 days for 10 long years. On the 89th day, I'd go out there and drink. Sometimes I'd be out there for a month. Sometimes I'd be out there for a couple of weeks. Sometimes just for the weekend, you know, but I always came back. I never gave up, you know, and even though at the moment, the time that I was picking up that bottle and I was putting that bottle to my lips, I was giving up just for that moment. I tell people also, you know, it's important that I've heard in the halls too, you know, it's important to think the drink through. You know, if I pick up that drink, what's going to happen to me? What do you think I'm going to be doing? How's my family going to react? You know, am I going to end up in jail with some beautiful new bling, which is like handcuffs in front of or behind you, you know, in your life, you know? And it's like, I say, like, when people say, you know, what's the price of a drink? For me, when I go to the bar, you know, and I order a drink, and the bartender tells me, you know, and I ask the bartender, like, what's the price? The price is I put my family up on the bar. I put my job up on the bar. I put my friends up on the bar. I put my family, you know, my kids, my parents, my siblings. I put everything up on the bar. That's the price that I pay. I have to think that. And I try to let people know that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I hear in the halls because I'm still active. You never have to feel this way again. You know, I can't say enough about that, you know, because I know how everybody is feeling, you know, when they're out there in that active alcoholism, drug addiction. I identify myself as an alcoholic, but I did drugs alcoholically, you know, and it's like they're a huge part of my story. But alcohol was my favorite, my drug of choice. I just tell people, you know, it's like I try to make the time for, I had a kid call me last night. He wanted to meet today and I said I would meet him and he didn't call me or anything like that. So I said I just prayed for him. You know, hopefully he'll have the courage and the strength to pick up that 10,000 pound phone, you know, and call me. You know, for some of us, it's heavier than that. I tell people, man, I know your pain. Believe me, I know your pain. I know what you're going through. And I'm going to tell you, you know, you never have to feel that way again. You know, H-O-P-E, hope. Hearing other people's experiences gives us hope.
Wow.
You know, when we're out there, I have a lot of acronyms. It's like what I'm sharing, I said, this lady was telling me about all her struggles with her relationships that she's having it right now, and really bad relationships, this and that. I'm like, and she's wondering why she's only like 30 days sober. And she's talking about all these relationships. I told her, I go, you know, relationships. RELATIONSHIP, relationship. A real exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril.
Oh.
And they're like, wait, say that again slowly. And they like got their pencil and paper out writing in their meeting book.
That's so cool.
You know, like I remember like I was probably 6 months sober and there was this girl that I used to like a real lot when I was out there and I was active. And so I was 6 months sober and she was still like shaking. She was like sober, like, you know, a couple of weeks, you know, and I wanted to date her. I told my sponsor, you know, and I said, man, I want to date this girl. I goes, no, you can't. I'm like, what do you mean I can't? I goes, listen, you need to, he goes, no major changes in your life for the first year. Just take that time to focus on yourself. You want to be in a relationship? Get a cat. I'm like, what? Get a cat? He goes, yeah, because even if you screw up, cats are independent. They'll take care of themselves. You know? I'm like, oh, man. Okay. The things you learn, you know, the things that, it's funny, the things that when you're in early sobriety, the things that you think you can get away with, you know, with your sponsor or with your group, you know, they've all been there before. They know the game. You know, and they just like shake their heads. Like, no, you can't do that, buddy. But
yeah.
Can I just say, I remember the very first time I met you, you know, was in Peabody, Massachusetts. and you were with Medicine Dream and you were young, because this was like 20 years ago or something, you were really young. And the beautiful relationships that you know, with you, with Paul, with Buzz, you know, that are still like part of my life today, you know, and that was like over 20 years ago when I met you guys. It's been a real joy, you know. It's like, it's so good to see all of us have gotten sober and you know, and we're giving back. You know, like sobriety is just an amazing thing that we get to be a part of.
That was beautiful, man. Don, what would you say to somebody that is struggling right now?
Struggling right now. Oh, man. Don't be hard on yourself. Put the bat away. Don't beat yourself up. Just continue to keep coming, you know, and don't leave until the miracle happens. Things will get better. Believe me, they will get better. Even on days that are really, really bad, still things are going to get better. You have to put hope in it. And, you know, and I can't talk enough about the power of prayer. You know, it's really important for me to have, you know, they say prayer is just conversations with your creator. And meditation is just listening. This too shall pass. You know, if you find the willingness to put the drink down or the drug down, you find the willingness, that's the most important thing you can do. You're willing to, like, try something different. You know, and that's what I had to do. Every time I relapsed, I tried something different that I didn't do last time. You know, and I just kept on, not that I was changing my definition of sobriety, but instead I was looking for different tools to help me get through another day that I didn't use before. So don't ever give up. Talk to your elders. You know, talk to other people in recovery. For me, I had to, like, you know, I put my trust and my faith in my elders, you know, to show me the way, because I didn't, you know, I was sponsoring myself, you know, and myself, you know, I told myself I don't need meetings. You know, I told myself, you know, I don't need a sponsor. You know, I told myself I don't need to surround myself with good sober people. You know, so of course I picked up, you know, it's really important in the beginning too, you know, they say change your playgrounds and change your playmates. Stop visiting all the other places that you used to go all the time. Like they say, you know, another thing I heard was, like, you keep hanging out at the barbershop, eventually you're going to get a haircut.
Yeah.
Because I had to stop all that, you know? Like, I had to change my friends. I really did, because none of them, they want to discourage you instead of encourage you, you know, because they're worried about losing their drinking buddy or whatever. They think you're going to change, you know? And that's okay, because we are going to change. You know, we are going to change. You know, when we get honest with ourselves and we allow ourselves to have that willingness to change. Ralph, C-H-A-N-G-E, change. Complete honesty allows new growth every day.
That's cool.
I got a million of them. But hang in there. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up. You know, on the days that are going to be hard, it's okay. There are days that are going to be good, that are going to be easy, that are going to be beautiful. You know, strive for those days each day. You know, leave that pain behind and allow yourself to heal. Allow yourself to heal. Put that bat away. You don't have to beat yourself up. Because as long as you have the willingness and you're willing to take the next steps to change the life that you have, then you're going to be okay. You know, just be sincere in your prayers. Because, you know, my dad always told me, you know, when I'm asking for something and I'm praying for something and I'm asking the Creator for help, he goes, just be sincere and Creator will hear you. You know, because there are a lot of times I used to pray, oh God, I don't want to do this again. You know, not another day. Wake up all sick and hungover. You know, those prayers change to slowing it down, thinking about it, saying, Creator, help me get through another day. Not again. Creator, help me get through the day. Remove the desire of a drink and a drug away from me just for today. That's all I need, just for today. And then tomorrow morning, I'll do the same prayer. You know, maybe change the words up a little bit, but have the same meaning. You know, because we come and we're broken and we just want to get well. You know, we bring a really broken spirit. I don't want to say just into the halls, but just into life, we bring a really broken spirit and we need a lot of healing. You know, and the only way that we're going to heal is that we take, you know, sobriety is an action word. You know, we have to take action. We have to do whatever it takes and have that willingness to do whatever it takes to get sober. Your life is going to change. And man, it's going to be a beautiful change. It's going to be a beautiful change. Like I said earlier, pretty soon there won't be enough hours in the day, enough days in the week to get to do the thing, all the beautiful things that you put aside, you put in the past, or that you just didn't have the courage to go after. Don't give up on yourself. You know, don't leave before the miracle happens. My sponsor used to tell me that all the time. You know, I still have the same sponsor with over 25 years, you know, and he's this really cool Irish dude. You know, and I don't even have a native sponsor, because it's funny, when I asked this guy to be my sponsor, whenever there was something that was bothering me, you know, like I had a resentment or something like that, it was like going to this big story and tell me this long story. And in the end, it had nothing to do with what was bothering me, but it helped me get my mind off that was bothering me, you know, and it helped me forget it. You know, so to me, he reminded me of the elders, you know, where, you know, they would tell you these beautiful stories, you know, and you would get so many teachings from it, you know, and you would forget about whatever was bothering you. So instead, he just did the Irish version of it. And he's still sober. He's like 40 years, you know, he's a good man. Allow yourself to heal. Allow yourself to heal. You're worth it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Don, I want to thank you so much for coming on again and sharing and updating, and congratulations on your huge milestone.
Thanks, bro. And I can't wait to pick up some more merch from you. Man, you got some beautiful merch. Okay. We're going to have to like do a trade or something.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Let's do that.
All right. That's the old Indian way, huh? With a little barter.
Yep.
For trade.
All right, man.
But I do. You know, when I got my 25 year coin, I was wearing your Deadly Sober Uncle sweatshirt.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
man. All right, Don. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, buddy, man. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and share a little bit of hope with the people. And, I'm wishing you and yours a wonderful year. And I hope, you know, we get to bump into each other again sometime.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Mondays at 2 p.m. on 88.1 FM KOYA. Rosebud's number one voice of the Secheng-Hu Lakota, serving the Rosebud Sioux Tribe Reservation in South Dakota. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.